Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. Not in studio with me is Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I'm good. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm great. If you listened to the last episode, you know I spilt my tea a little bit ago, but I'm soldiering through. Everything's going to be okay. Lisa grabbed some fresh coffee.
Let me get my little violin out.
Lisa's got some fresh coffee, so we're all beveraged up. Maybe we might need to, if we're going to record in the morning, we might need to change the name of the show, the Child Care, the Child Care Cafe.
Well, I only told you it was coffee in the mug. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, well, I've seen you drink coffee before, so I know it's in the mug. Mm-hmm. Coffee, what do you mean by that?
Today it is actually a double shot of espresso.
Mm-hmm. So the topic, the topic we thought we'd get into now is, and I think we mentioned it in the last episode, it's something we say quite often. What do you mean by that? Go ahead.
Well, when we wrapped up the last episode, I had something jumped into my head, and I already knew that we were at 32 minutes or whatever. And it was hard for me because I wanted to interrupt Jeff and be like, hold on, I have an idea. So we decided just to plop that into doing a follow-up episode. And we always are asking, what do you mean by that? But specifically to the last episode, Jeff was talking about the modifiers that we all often attach to the idea of play, that it's a purposeful play or meaningful play, or, you know, why isn't it just play? And my thought was, might there be a challenge here or a call to action or whatever is thinking about what makes it purposeful? You know, where's the criteria coming from, or how is something purposeful or not purposeful, and how do you know that? And how do you know that that's meaningful play, and kind of putting that burden of proof on those of us who might find ourselves in a pattern of it having to be modified. Is that the right word? Would you just say modified?
Yeah.
It has to have this like asterisk of clarification as opposed to just being play. I mean, we all know it's more than just play, but if we find ourselves feeling like it has to be defined by either being purposeful or meaningful or whatever, what criteria are we using? Whose criteria are we using?
So in your experience asking that question, what do you mean by that? What are there any
common
general, are there any generally common responses to that? Because one I see is some version of deer in the headlights.
Well, yes, exactly. And then you sit in that quiet for a minute and you give them a minute to actually think about it. Mm-hmm. And either they'll get to a point of having a response for you, or at that moment, without you saying anything, they realize that they have no idea.
Which can be a very uncomfortable, scary
spot.
Yeah, it's just kind of a hard place to be, and I've been in that situation plenty of times with this profession and other aspects of my life. But that you almost go into panic mode when you start thinking about those things you haven't really thought about before. And that's just really uncomfortable. So I guess for listeners who find themselves in that spot, I mean, I guess you breathe through it and realize that it's okay not to know everything and not to have an answer to that question, and then be prepared to try to figure out how a way to move forward, whatever that looks like for you.
Yes, and I think realizing that if you continue to engage in behavior and you really honestly have no idea why you're doing it, that needs to be remedied. And I have gone so far as to say that if you don't know what you mean by that, if you don't know what you're doing or why you're doing it or who it's for, you're not allowed to keep doing it until you figure it out. And I'll meet you where you are. Like, if your honest answer to me is like, you have to shut down rough and tumble play. Why? Well, because that's what my professor said. Okay, that's a starting spot, right? Like, we can have the philosophy debate another time, but let's meet you where you are. So your professor told you that. Okay, it's a starting spot. That's the place where you have decided to make that decision. Is that working currently in this situation, right? And it's kind of breaking up sometimes with the dogma that was spoon-fed to us, or the Kool-Aid, I like to say that, the Kool-Aid that we drunk, and realizing that something maybe that you were taking as gospel isn't working. We've podcasted about that. You know, the day you have to realize that something you have held dear no longer is working.
Yeah, and we did the whole episode on breaking up with ideas, and if you haven't listened to that episode, you might want to go back and check it out, because basically you go through this this discomfort and this mourning, and it's breaking up with ideas in this profession is almost the same thing as having a relationship end. It's a hard thing to go through.
Yeah, because it's like you were basing your entire thing. You know, your work, your whatever you want to call it, your mindset was based on this nugget that you thought was truth, and to come face to face with the fact that either one, it's not working, whether it's true or not, it's not working, so it might need to be reinvestigated, or even worse, when you actually get like true data or some kind of scientific evidence that totally debunks something that you thought was true. That's a bitter pill.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean we've
because
both.
Sometimes it's working, but it's no longer true, and you're like, oh shit, that's almost worse.
And this stuff happens all the time. We've done episodes on myths and the brain myths and the left and right brain thing and learning styles and this kind of stuff, and it's stuff that we had connection to and kind of took at face value because that's what kind of the whole profession did, and then new deeper
evidence.
Better evidence comes available, and you gotta be willing to step back and look at it. So I think not only should we ask others, what do you mean by that? I think turning that question back on ourselves, what do I mean by that, is a good question you can have in your toolbox if you're going to be a reflective practitioner in this field.
Totally.
I think we need to constantly be asking ourselves that question. What do I mean by that? Or why do I do that? I think that's another variation of the question, because, you know, a session I've been doing a lot lately revolves around the uncomfortable, the taboo kinds of play, the rough and tumble and the superhero and the weapons and the death and that kind of stuff. And a lot of people, you know, I don't want you necessarily to agree with me just because I showed up here and talked about this, but kind of step back and question the way you've been doing things and reevaluate and change your practice accordingly based on new evidence, which is I think what we really need to work at in this profession.
Well, and if we are saying that we're believers and advocates of play, but only the play that I like or the play that I'm comfortable around, you know, then I think there's room to question what you mean by a believer in play.
Yeah, yeah, and that self-questioning.
Certain kinds of play, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like,
the good play.
Good play.
The quiet play. The stuff that's not too rowdy or too wild or too distracting. Those kinds of play. Those are fine. All this other stuff is just a little bit too chaotic for me here.
Well, and we've broached this both on the road in workshops and also on the air numerous times. Is the self-reflection that's required at that juncture, right? And we're not therapists. However,
we play one on the internet.
We play one on the internet occasionally. Is, you know, what is that play bringing up in you? And I'm not a therapist, and it's not, you know, in the scope of my work to, you know, bring you down that path. But I think there's room to throw that question out there. You know, why are you having such a response, such a reaction to this particular kind of play, but not this particular kind of play? And although, you know, Jeff and I might not be the people to go down that path with you professionally, you know, there might be room to do some investigating on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
what's being brought up in you that's causing this to be an issue?
One thing I bring up when we're talking about, I mean, weapons play, a big part of weapons play is that the weapons are symbolic of power and leadership and control. And kids want those things. They want to play with those big concepts, those big ideas. And classrooms will ban weapons play, no Ninja Turtle swords and no lightsabers and no guns. But they embrace things like mom play and princess play. Well, it's they're playing with the same symbols. They're playing with the same ideas. They're just using different symbols. If you're the princess and you've got a tiara on, that's the same as a lightsaber or a Ninja Turtle sword or Captain America's shield. It's a symbol of I'm the boss. I'm in control here and I have power. The same thing with the princess fairy wand or whatever it is. If you can turn somebody into a frog, it's the same thing as being able to shoot them and make them die. It's playing with the same ideas, but we embrace part of them and we shun the others. And that comparison, I've seen people's jaw drop when you turn that switch on for them, because it's a way of looking at it they haven't done. And then I ask them, or they ask themselves, you almost see the question being asked themselves, why am I doing that? What do I mean by banning this one kind of play and then embracing this other kind of play that's exactly the same thing when you pick it apart?
And I'm going to circle back, because I think you went through something very, very important very quickly, and so I'm going to bring your attention back to it. The idea of those things being symbols,
mm-hmm.
and that often as individual people, not even as teachers, as individual people, we see that some are acceptable and some are not. Like, we'll have a more adult understanding or an adult reaction to a play gun just because of what we as adults know about guns, right? Or whatever the thing, whatever your hot topic might be. And so we can get stuck there and not let ourselves see that it's not about a kid wanting to kill somebody. It's about the symbolicness, the symbol of the power. And I think as a young teacher, Dan was actually the first one, Dan Hodgins was the first one to point that out to me. And so I feel, and I'll own this, I feel very, very fortunate that Dan entered my world of, you know, he was who I would go listen to as a speaker. I was glad when I found him. I didn't have to unlearn too many bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was able to be like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. You know, because they keep power, right? They'll be shooting everybody with this Lego thing, and then you say, no guns at school, and they're like, but it's a train. You know, they're keeping that power, even just in the power of rule shifting, right? Of saying, oh, it's not that, you're wrong, it's this, haha, I'm still the boss of school. You know, and it's like, oh my God, like, and you said you see their jaws drop. For me, I felt like a layer on my eyeball got taken off, and I was like, oh my God. And so I go back to the classroom on that Monday, and I'm like seeing everything as a symbolic gesture as opposed to literal, and it really helped. It really helped me because, I mean, I was on that fast track. I mean, I actually remember that. I mean, we're going down the slippery slope of turning this into, you know, power play, gun play conversation. But I remember picking up the trash can in the classroom and marching over to one of the boys. His name was Benjamin. And I marched up to Benjamin and I said, throw those guns in the trash can. There's no guns at school. And he looked at me and he goes, but they're my fingers. And, you know, three-year-olds have the ability to stop you in your tracks when you find yourself acting too much like a power control freak, hungry adult. And it was awesome. But they're my fingers. How do I throw them in the trash can?
Yeah.
Stupid Miss Lisa.
Come on, lady.
Come on.
Well, and that's such a big part of it. And maybe we need to do a whole episode on this sometimes, but the symbol thing, a lot of times when we talk about observing in the classroom, we get locked into just the literal that's going on. Johnny is building with the blocks and that kind of stuff. And part of that observation process needs to be looking for that deeper layer of symbolic play. And what's that mean? And what's that? And that takes a little bit more practice. That's not something that, that you can have a lot of skill with real early on in your trajectory in the profession. I don't think, I mean, some people are probably, just naturally good at it, but I think it's something that most of us have to work at a little bit to be able to see that layer of happening in the environment.
Oh, I agree 100%. You have to train your eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and Dan was my go-to for so long with that. You know, this is not about a kid wanting to kill everybody, but you have that adult response to it. Why is that play? And the one analogy he used that has stuck with me, you know, for all these years, he's like, nobody walks by the kid in the block area and assumes that he's going to be an architect, right? Nobody walks by the kid at the easel and assumes that they're going to be an artist, but everybody walking by these kids thinks they're, you know, this is like killer training, you know? Why do we have that? And it's an adult moral value response to certain kinds of play. The other thing, as I've gotten older, is the understanding of, and again, this is that I talked a little bit about this in the last episode about how, you know, you're never done learning. You're never done growing. You're never done understanding more about your profession and your art. And as a recently learning more about the types of play, I think had that been on my radar, you know, when I was still in the classroom, that would have assisted even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That even under the umbrella of power play, there's probably four or five different kinds of play that you might see. And you mentioned in the last episode, the play workers, you know, and a lot of the play work that's coming over from the UK, they break that down into, you know, all of the different types of play that you're going to see in this space. And I think for some people, the idea that, you know, oh, this is one of those, you know, not that I'm defaulting to some kind of a checklist, but I also think that for people who really are averse to it or really, really concerned with it, if we're able to show you kind of catering to that one, you know, that, well, I'm probably using too many words, but that this isn't something that's just happening here with you that's making you crazy. This is documented, observed kids all over the world. It's been happening for years. You know, we now have this list. These are the most common play types that you're going to see. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is happening all over.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like this isn't just about this kid wanting to make me crazy. This is happening all over the world.
There's a solid and rich body of evidence that shows that this is a developmental thing. This is something that all children do all over the place. And
that could be a point of entry,
yeah,
depending on the personality style of who you're hanging out with. You know, some people you say, hey, you know what, it's okay, fine. You know, every kid does this. They're like, oh, okay. And they'll buy in right away because either they trust you or whatever. You know, you have a relationship with them. And then there's other people, you got to, you know, it's such a dance, right? You still got to meet them where they are. So
yeah,
if this particular person needs an article, you got to be able to link them to that.
Well, and so let's start wrapping this up. So we started out with what do you mean by that? And it's a question we can ask parents and coworkers and try to gain understanding, so that we're all kind of working with the same terminologies and the same definitions. But what do I mean by that is a question we can ask ourselves when we're evaluating our own practice. And what do they mean by that is a question we can ask when we're doing observation and seeing something that we don't quite understand going on in the play space, and kind of dig a little bit deeper and maybe better see the symbolism of the play and try to figure it out. And I mean, we see that with, you know, understanding that the weapons are symbols of power, the tiara is a symbol of power, but also understanding that the type of play going on in the dramatic play area after the weekend is kids recreating and trying to make sense of something that happened at home over the weekend, those kind of things, and being able to see that deeper layer. That's a good question you can ask yourselves in those situations. So if you're looking at deepening your practice, I think those three questions, those three variations of that one question, I guess, are good starting points for some of that.
I think so, and I would also add to that it's okay to pause conversations to make sure that people are having similar or the same definitions of some of those words, right?
So, yeah.
You know, just because we're all early childhood people doesn't mean we have the same working definition of what we might think is just an industry accepted word. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So it's okay to get some clarification.
Yeah, and doing it in as friendly a way as possible. I mean, online, I pretty much always preface it with, I'm not trying to be a dick, but, because that kind of stuff comes across as, especially online, it comes across as accusatory and threatening a lot of times. And I haven't found an emoji that means, hey, I'm just wondering. And so the, hey, I'm not trying to be a dick preference works for me some of the time, I guess. I don't know. Any more before we wrap this one up?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Go over to ooeygooey.com if you need more Lisa Murphy, explorationsearlylearning.com if you want some more of me. And if you're looking for more podcasts to listen to, go over to PlayVolution HQ. Did some numbers crunching the other day, Lisa, and we have on the site there over 500 hours of podcasts.
Wow.
Not just our show, but all the others. That's I think it's close to 1,000 episodes of childcare based podcasts over at PlayVolution.
That's like
HQ.
A master's degree.
Yeah. And we've also got a thing set up that if you want a self-study certificate, because some states allow self-study, a certain number of hours of self-study, we've got actually certificates you can generate through a link over there, and that's all on the site, or you can email me about questions, because I know some people like to do that. Enjoy the day. Keep listening and keep asking yourself the hard questions. It helps you move down the path in this profession. Bye bye.
You don't have to have the answers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Just,
but, you know,
being brave enough to ask the question is a good starting point.
There you go. Yes. Okay, now you can say goodbye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.